this is Maggie from the Positude Shows. Tonight's show will be a Positude powwow, and I have with me tonight a special guest. Her name is Lisa Block-Saylor, and I came across Lisa's article on Facebook. It was regarding some of the things that were going on in the Houston area as a result of the devastation that occurred with Hurricane Harvey. And she was most gracious and agreed to come on and talk with me today and share some of her experiences that she's had as a volunteer helping victims of Hurricane Harvey. So without any further ado, I'd like to bring her right on. She's a very busy woman and short on time. And I appreciate so much for taking the time out to talk to us. But I'd like to get right into the interview because I know that she has other pressing issues that she has to get back to. Lisa, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Maggie. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thanks so much for agreeing to come on. I really appreciate your taking the time out. As I said, I know how busy you are right now. To get started, how long have you lived in the Houston area?
I've been in Houston about 25 years. We moved here from Dallas, and we came to Houston. My husband started a new career, and we moved here about in 1993, I believe. So quite a while.
Okay. And how did you become involved in the hurricane relief efforts? I assume you were there for the duration of the storm.
Oh, yes. We were here the few days leading up to the hurricane, and then through the hurricane, and of course, after the hurricane. And what happened, how I became involved is I live in the downtown area of Houston, and I live across the street from our convention center, which is the very first shelter that they opened up two Sundays ago, the Sunday right after the hurricane. Of course, Houston did not suffer from the hurricane per se. We were affected by the rain that the hurricane brought to Houston. The hurricane actually affected more of southwestern Texas, Rockport, Corpus Christi, what we got. And then the hurricane, if you look at the path of the hurricane, it came up through about Corpus Christi, and then it backed down into the Gulf and gained moisture and speed, and then came back up to Houston, and then just kind of stalled over Houston. So, So that Sunday, when the city started to flood, I received a call from a prominent member of the Houston City Council, and they said that they were going to open up the shelter across the street. And would I start mobilizing volunteers to go over there? This is way before the Red Cross became involved. We're on the scene. And so I started immediately making phone calls to get some donations of food and clothing and towels and that kind of thing. So I was there almost from the time we unlocked the door to allow the first person that was rescued from the flood into the convention center.
Okay, I see. And so when you became involved in your starting of organizational process, collecting supplies, at what point was it that the Red Cross became directly involved?
We were on our own for, I want to say, and what I mean on our own is I live in a high rise, and there are about 300 residents that live in my building, and we were the only ones that were able to get to the convention center due to all the flooding. You have to realize that the city, over 30% of our city was underwater, which meant highways, cross streets, bypasses, all those things were underwater. So no one else could get to the convention center. So it was myself and several volunteers from our high rise, and very few other people that live in the downtown area joined us. And so we organized the relief efforts for a good 24 to 30 hours before we ever saw a Red Cross volunteer.
I see. And then did they just appear and offer to help, or did they take over the building? What happened? What were the chain of events that led up to them coming in and providing the assistance that they claim to have provided?
Yes. Almost from the beginning, all of us that had, and I had kind of taken the lead and sort of taken over or started to, from the very beginning, I started organizing the donation area where we had the clothing set up and towels, because everyone came wet. Many, many people came without shoes. Several of them didn't have their shirts because they had been walking in as high as chest deep, even neck deep in some cases, rushing water. So, you know, some of them, their clothes had been torn off, they'd lost their shoes, and 90% of them walked in there with absolutely nothing. Not a purse, not an ID, nothing. So these were very desperate people. The very first night, we had people sleeping on cardboard. We had very, very few cots. We were trying to organize the cots so that people had a place to lay down. The very first night, we had around 500 people. And then the Red Cross came the second, I would say later the second day. And it was apparent that they wanted to take over. Several of us kind of felt like, several of us kind of felt like we were sort of being pushed out, and you know that our help was needed, but it was going to have to be their way. So there was a little bit of, I would say, tension among the volunteers that had started the relief effort, and then when the Red Cross got there. And then the second night we had about 2,500 people, and then the third night, by that Tuesday night, the number had jumped up just short of 10,000 people. So you can tell it was a huge organizational event. You know, it took a lot of people to organize that many displaced people.
I'm sure. So they, you know, these people are suffering. They don't have any food. They don't have any clothing. They don't have any worldly possessions at all to speak of. Basically, they and their families fled to safety. We're doing the best that you could to provide for these people and to help these people with the help of volunteers that you had gathered. And then the Red Cross came in and said to you, well, you know, we want to take over. I understand why there would be tension there. And so what were your experiences from that point on? I know that on your Facebook you had shared some experiences that you had with getting supplies to the people. Would you tell us a little bit more about that and maybe some additional stories that weren't shared on your Facebook post?
Well, it the frustrating part to me was that the donations started to come in. Of course, in the very first few days, we worked with very little. That very first morning when people woke up that first day, you know, we had really no water to give them. There, someone did come in and provide some oatmeal. And honestly, I'm not exactly sure who that was, if that was Red Cross or if that was an individual from Houston, you know, some catering company or an organization. I'm not sure who provided that very first few meals. Right. But the food was very sparse. And then as time progressed over the next few days, and even though the flooding continued to get worse, some of the organizations had high water vehicles, and we were able to get more and more donations into the building. But where I could see the problem was is that the donations were dropped off at the back of the building, and this convention center is three stories high, and there is a loading dock on the third level, and all of the displaced people were on the first level. And I would go, I'm a very sort of take charge person, and I just went indoors that I wasn't supposed to, in areas that I wasn't supposed to find out where things were. And I go up on the third floor, and there are all kinds of supplies. And I have people on the first floor that don't have blankets, that don't have baby formula, that don't have hygiene products. And what was happening is that there was no communication between the first and the third floor. And there were no radios for someone in the hygiene that was handing out hygiene products to say, I need soap and, you know, deodorant and that toothpaste and that kind of thing, when there were boxes of it up on the third floor. So it was extremely frustrating to see these supplies up there and them not getting to the people. I had a woman with a disabled son that needed a baby stroller. She had been carrying this little guy around. He was four, but he was severely disabled. And she had been carrying him around, or he had to lay flat down on the cot, which is not healthy for him. So I was desperate to find this woman a stroller. Well, she was told many, many times that there weren't any strollers. Well, I go up on the third floor, and sure enough, there's strollers up there. There's baby beds up there. And I just couldn't believe that there was no more organization than there was. No one had an inventory list. And I'm talking pallets that came on semi-trucks, pallets of supplies. I'm not talking about a few boxes. I'm talking about huge warehouse full of supplies. And there was no one to say, and a lot of it was in big, huge boxes, and it was not marked. And what happens is large organizations such as airlines and retail stores would send supplies in, and so you could tell who sent it, but you couldn't tell what was in the box for the most case. And there was no one up there to say, oh, you need wheelchairs. Well, they're over on this pallet, or they're in this part of the warehouse. So as you can tell, it was very, very frustrating to know that there was real desperate needs downstairs. The supplies were upstairs, and I couldn't solely do it on my own. I did as much as I could, but I couldn't solely do it on my own. And then I would say maybe the sixth day, then the National Guard comes in, and they're upstairs guarding this stuff. And I had one red National Guard. Yes. The National Guard was in, and they were trying to make some organization of it. But I went up there and I said, I'm looking for certain. My focus was mother and children, because I feel mothers with children, because I feel like they're the most vulnerable, the children. They're the ones that have been traumatized the most. So I tried to focus on that.
And absolutely. I would do the same. Sure.
Yeah. Yes. And like I said in my post, part of my gripe, so to speak, is that no one thought to order, no one in the Red Cross thought through it enough to think, okay, most of the displaced people are on assistance, on some kind of public assistance. What kind of baby formula does WIC, which is Women and Children Services, what kind of baby formula do these kids need? There was baby formula, but none of it was the right kind. And I'm thinking, this is not brain surgery. I could figure this out, and I'm a layperson. I'd have boxes of baby formula that the Red Cross had ordered, but it wasn't the right kind. And some of these volunteers would say, oh, there's plenty of baby formula, but it was my job to tell him, yes, there's plenty of baby formula, but you don't switch one baby, a baby from one formula to the other. They have to stay on what they've been given up to that point. I'm getting frustrated just even thinking about it. So when the National Guard came in, I go up there and I can't remember exactly what I was looking for. Little babe porta cribs or something for kids. Because, you know, these kids had to sleep with their parents, and these kids are, these cots are extremely narrow. So you can imagine how difficult that would be. I was looking for little porta cribs. And this National Guardsman, I found a few, and the National Guardsman said, "You can't take that. That's for the Red Cross." I'm thinking, aren't we all here to serve these people? I just didn't understand it. I didn't understand the logic behind why it was necessary for someone with a red vest to hand it out. That's what the feeling that I was getting, versus someone that does not have a red vest. Aren't we all here to serve these people that are in need?
But yet the people with the red vest weren't distributing the items that were needed. So you're trucking back and forth to the third floor to try and obtain these items and being told, no, you can't have them. So why weren't they being distributed, Lisa, in your opinion? I understand the lack of communication between the first and the third floor, but I would assume, and being an organizational person myself, I would assume that they had at least a semblance of an idea of what had come in on those tractor trailers. Why were they not bringing that stuff down to distribute to the people?
All I can do is take an educated guess, because I really don't understand it myself. But I do feel that between some of the vendors that provided things, and I would love to call out one particular vendor that the Red Cross uses quite a bit, they set up a store inside the area where the donations were. There were five halls. One of the large halls, convention halls, was the distribution center where they went for meals, the medical area, the pharmacy, mental health. So all the services were in one hall. So this very large vendor who's all over the United States and all the rural areas sets up this store to hand out items that people need. Well, they gated this area off with this fencing kind of thing with a key. And people had to wait in line, and it had to be during certain hours. Well, again, this was a baby formula issue. I had three starving babies, hungry babies, crying outside by this little other area where I had diapers and all that were not provided by this large vendor. But I didn't have the formula. But yet the formula is locked up less than 100 feet away from me. And one of the guys over there in a yellow vest with that company said, I asked him, can I have that case of baby formula there? I needed to feed these hungry babies. And I was told, no, this store opens up at 9 a.m. This was at 6 o'clock at night. And they wanted to hand that stuff out themselves. And I feel like a lot of that was the issue with the Red Cross. They wanted their own volunteers in the red vests to hand this stuff out. That's the only thing I can think of, that it's a lot of it is about PR.
Well, in my opinion, you're there to serve. You were the first at the site, at the convention center. You had brought people with you to help serve the community. What would it have taken just to have given you a vest and maybe even if they wanted to remain in charge, you know, given you, a supervisor or something to report to, so that you could relay your needs to them and tell them what these children needed, tell them what the families needed, and then have them work with you to provide that to these people. Would you say most people were aware of this quote-unquote store that were on the premises so that they knew to go and stand online to obtain the materials that they needed? Or, I mean, how does that work? They got online and and waited for items? Were they given the items when they waited online?
Okay. They were given a voucher. I wish I could have figured this out. I still might go over there today and figure out exactly how much they're able to spend within the store. Again, they are given it for free, so they're not charged, but you get a voucher. Now, the first day or so that the store was open, it didn't seem that busy. The second and third day it was open, and they only did it for like 4 or 5 hours in the morning, and then they would do it again in the afternoon from what I could tell. And if you didn't get what you needed, and they had, you know, underwear, socks, baby items, t-shirts, I think they had shorts, they had, hygiene products, you know, your basic things. But you get this voucher and they write down your name. So you're limited to how much you can get, which I can understand somewhat. You know, there you don't want abuse, and that does happen. That is not the majority of the people. The majority are very honest, needy people. But if you waited in line for 3 hours and get up there and they're out of a certain thing, then you're SOL. I don't know. It just seemed to be, in my estimation, it just seemed to be between the Red Cross and this one particular vendor, it just seemed to be more about allowing. Actually, I had one of these guys with the yellow vest on wanted me, they had to order this special formula. I had a woman that had premature twins, and she was discharged from the hospital, which is about 10 blocks away from the shelter. She was discharged with these premature twins that weighed 4 and a half pounds directly to the shelter.
Wow.
Which I still can't believe. Yes. And they needed a special formula, a Neo for premature babies, some Neo Sure is the name of it. Well, the vendor, they did help me get it to her, get it for her, but they didn't want me to give it to her without one of their representatives because they wanted to take pictures.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. Yeah. Emotionally, how traumatic that was for you and the other volunteers. Just hearing these stories myself makes me so incredibly upset and sad and yes, angry, I have to admit. Why? I just don't understand why it had to be that way. How was the food distributed? Was that on a voucher basis also? Was it like a soup kitchen line? How did they organize that? And how were the meals for the people? Was everybody getting fed, at least, if they weren't able to get supplies?
Well, the food was given out 3 times a day during certain hours. So if you came to the shelter, and I know of an instance where this happened, a family, this was again early on, the shelter will be opened 3 weeks this Sunday. So, you know, it's been 2.5 weeks now. So this was a little bit early on. But a family of, I don't remember if it was 3 or 4 children, had been on their roof for hours and hours. and they were rescued by boat, brought to the shelter. The kids had not eaten in 24 hours. That's hard to even talk about without choking up. And they went to the food distribution center. And a friend of mine, this is how I heard this story. I was not involved, so this is hearsay, but I trust this man with everything that I know. In fact, he never went back to the shelter because of this. But he was a regular volunteer like myself. He lives in my building, so he'd been over there the whole time. And he was back where the food was being served. And there's food on the table behind him. And this family came up, and the mom said, "My kids haven't eaten. We're starving." He went to get the food for the family. And he was told, no, he couldn't do that. It's not mealtime. And that family, he had to go back and tell that family with those children that they had to wait. Now, that to me, I'm telling you,
that's cruelty. That's cruelty. I'm sorry, there's no other way.
It is cruelty. and their reasoning, and I heard this 3 or 4 times. We don't want to start something. If you do for one, you have to do for all. So they're afraid of this, you know, well, if they see you handing out food, then everyone's going to want it, which is ridiculous. And the food is very institutional. I've done some work in prisons, and it's not a whole lot better than what they serve in our justice system. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, not to interrupt you, but you're saying these children had to go after however many hours on the roof without food. They had to wait until the next morning to get something to eat.
Well, until the next meal. I honestly, I want to keep my facts straight. I don't know 100% if it was the next morning, but they did have to wait when the food was within arm's reach. And here's the other thing. They were served basically one meal. And if a 2-year-old can't eat chili because it's too spicy, then there was really nothing else to eat. Now, that did get a little better last week. They started bringing in some snacks and all of that. But early on, I was calling my friends and my acquaintances. I was putting posts out on social media. You know, I need snacks for these kids. There was no milk for kids, very, very little fresh fruit, no finger foods for toddlers.
You were asking for foods from your friends, and I would assume that they answered your call and brought the food in for you that the children needed as they were able. Were you able then to freely distribute that food? Were you able to walk around with a grocery bag and hand the food out to the people that you had personally obtained to help these people?
Yes. Early on, the first few days, yes. First maybe 4 or 5 days. Then we were told by Red Cross they weren't accepting any more donations. I had put a call out on Facebook that we needed car seats because moms did not, you know, they'd been at the shelter. Then they found that they could go to a relative or a friend's house or something like that. Well, these moms didn't want to travel in a car without a car seat, which is totally understandable. There were no car seats. I put a message out on Facebook. I need car seats. I had a woman that wrangled 5 car seats. I had to tell that woman that Red Cross said, you cannot bring those in.
Oh my.
And the same thing with the snacks. I was told that they would not allow any more donations, regardless of whether or not I saw the need. I was going to take care of it and I was going to distribute it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
oh,
those
wow.
People were forced to travel with their children without the safety of a car seat if they wanted to go to a relative's home.
Yeah. Yeah.
My goodness. How many people would you say still are at the shelter as of today?
I did not go over there yesterday. I can't say. I would imagine that it's somewhere between 500 and 800, maybe. That's my guess of it, because it was 1,200 at the end of last week. Honestly, I have decided that I am better served not going over there anymore, and I've switched my focus to needy families that have been in the shelter and have moved out. So it got so frustrating for me. And many volunteers, the guy that had to tell the family that there was no food, he never went back. He said, I can't deal. And I know of at least three volunteers who did that because of the Red Cross. And it wasn't because they weren't needed. It was because they were so frustrated with the way things were run and the way things were going that they, one woman wrote on her Facebook, And I know this woman personally. I know what she did at the Georgia Run. And she wrote on her Facebook, I'd rather be mudding out, which is cleaning out a house that was flooded. I'd rather be mudding out and around mold than around the Red Cross's BS.
And so when you, the last time that you were there, obviously, there are many less families that are there, I would assume, because they did find shelter somewhere else with a loved one.
Yes, what's happened, yes. So there's a lot of families, and I've visited several over the last week, a lot of families that have generations staying in a one- or two-bedroom apartment. I visited one family where there's, I think, 12 people in a one-bedroom apartment. So they are... You know,
fleeing the shelter
up
so that they can have a better quality of life, essentially, is what I perceive it to be. If they were being fully provided for at these shelters and properly cared for, and at least their children getting meals to eat and supplies that they needed, I would assume that they wouldn't want to burden their families that were already overcrowded, that they would stay where they were had they the help that they needed at that facility. Am I right?
Well, I don't, of course, I'm not going to speak for people that left the shelter, because my house stayed dry. I'm in a high rise. So, I wasn't put in that situation. But I know being in a community shelter with hundreds, if not thousands of people, is nowhere to live. You have no privacy. You wait in line for absolutely everything. So I do believe that a crowded apartment or a crowded small home with friends and family is the better option. Now, again, I have heard of displaced families that were over there that said they could not wait to get out because of the way things were being run. I've heard, I heard one lady who was asked by the Red Cross to do an interview on a national network morning show, and she was kind of told what to say, and she felt like she had to say nice things about the shelter because Red Cross asked her to do the interview. And she just told me a few days ago that she felt like everything she said was untrue. So that's the feeling. I'm sure there were some people that thought it was fine, but most of the volunteers and the displaced people that I talked to were extremely disappointed in the way things ran and how they were treated.
Absolutely. So those are just a few stories that you chose to share with us, and I really appreciate that. These goods, just so that I have it straight, all these goods that were coming in off of the tractor trailer were provided by the Red Cross, correct? They weren't donations, were they, from your people or from people that you had called on for help? Did everything
take place,
I guess, is my question initially.
Most of the donations that I wrangled up myself were used up early on in the first 3 or 4 days. So the donations that I'm speaking of that were not being logistically handed out were from, most of them were from large corporations, many oil companies, large box retailers that had sent things over for the Red Cross to hand out. And then also what happens is that from my little limited knowledge of how it runs, because I have not been a Red Cross volunteer, is that Red Cross, they order things that they need for the shelter through some of the big box retailers.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that, not to interrupt you, but my question here to you is, because of your experience in this instance, and we can only assume that in areas that are hit by or were hit by Hurricane Irma, and actually in other outlying areas, not just Houston and Texas, that this type of thing has gone on. I've read of several stories. I've heard other people's testimonies who have posted public Facebook videos of just really horrific experiences they've had in regards to this organization. Would there be a place that you would recommend for people to be able to send donations to, food, clothing, money, etc.? And would you be willing to accept some of the things for the people? Are you going to, when you said that you'd like to continue your efforts, but emotionally you can't be there, I can totally understand why you would feel that way, because it's so traumatic for you to not be able to, it's not a privilege, but to have to witness these people that are suffering and aren't getting the supplies that they need. You're going to continue your efforts, I would assume, on your own and maybe pop in there on occasion. Okay.
Yes. Well,
Is there something that we can do for you? Go ahead with your thought.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I'm serving on several families. I have a running list of families that I am serving around the city of Houston that were once in the shelter. And I'm willing to take on more families if I have the the finances to do that. So I set up my own little charity, Women and Children's Emergency Fund. And it's with a church that so kindly allowed me to, I don't have my own 501c3, although I am now in the process of doing that. But it's Restoration Church, WF.breeze, BREEZECHMS.com. And they might have a, I think they have a little link that you can donate to women and children for my little charity. And then the other charity I would recommend, it goes directly to the city. If you prefer to do that, and the city has access to those funds immediately, and they are doing a good job of serving people also. And that is G as in George, H as in Henry, C as in Cat, F as in Frank.org, Hurricane Relief, /Hurricane-Relief. And those are the two that that I feel like, of course, my own will go. I will use the funds that anyone donates on to me to directly serve the people that need it the most. And I'm personally buying those supplies and delivering them to families.
And I applaud you because you think exactly the way that I do. I would assume that you had gotten these people's contact information before they left the shelter so that you were able to keep in touch with them and help them on your own. Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Thank you so much for
everything
you've done. Listen, What would you recommend in lieu of money for people who maybe have outgrown their baby items or have things that they're no longer using? What would you say are your most pressing items that you would like to have sent to you? What is it that you need the most?
Oh gosh, my most pressing items would be, of course, diapers, and those can be ordered through Amazon. And then I need older children's clothes. I've done pretty well collecting, say, the toddler clothes, baby and toddler clothes, but I need children's clothes from 6X through 16, that middle range, before they hit the adult sizes, and then shoes, any size of shoes I can use.
Okay, what about things like bottles or blankets or strollers or
sure
that?
Yes, any kind of baby items. Oh, and household items. Yes, many of these families lost everything, so dishes, silverware, towels, linens, sheets, blankets, pillows. Yes, if they want to send it, I can find a very needy home for it to go to. And I just want to mention that I also vetted my families to make sure that they were in the flood, that they were affected, that they're worthy families. I just want to be careful that I wasn't going to have someone that was going to abuse the charity, and all of these families are extremely grateful and feel very blessed that they have the help. So,
how about hygienic supplies? Because myself up here, I've been putting together boxes that I was going to ship out this Friday to another organization of, the individual travel size shampoos, conditioners, body wash, toothbrushes, the little individual toothpaste. About the size that you would get from typically a hotel, things like that. Would you be receptive to receiving hygienic items as well? Razor blades,
yes.
Things like that?
Yes, razor blades, absolutely razor blades, yes. Very much in need. Yes, I can do the hotel size. I have to give families, several of those. So the regular size is good too, but like I said, Maggie, if someone wants to send me stuff, I will be happy to. And I'm also partnering with a pediatric group and helping them out with some of their patients. So I have plenty of people that have the need for it.
Okay, is there a physical address that you could provide for people to send
sure.
things to you?
Sure.
Or to the organization, whichever you prefer.
Yes, it's 1400. McKinney Street, MC, capital KINNEY, Street, Houston, Texas, 77010. And I can just mark it Lisa Saylor.
Okay. Lisa, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me today and for being able to share your stories with the public. I know that you could probably go on for hours. I can feel how emotionally upsetting this has been for you. I myself was getting very choked up at pretty much everything that you had to share. And I just want you to know how much people really do appreciate everything that you've done, all of your efforts, the fact that you were able to have the courage to come forward and be honest in what you had observed. The hours and hours. I know that when we had spoken the other day, you're on a 14 to 16 hour typically day of volunteering for these people. Yesterday when we spoke to set up the appointment, you were driving food to areas in which you had no idea where you were even going, trying to find these families to distribute the items that they needed. Truly, and I'm not one to kiss butt, as it were. But
yeah.
Your efforts are truly to be applauded. And all of those that have helped you, thank you so much for everything that you've done. Mm-hmm. And please keep in touch with me, too, and let me know how things are going and if there are other items that you're needing so that I can share that in future broadcasts with people. And let us know how the efforts are going there. within your community. If there are donations that can be made for anything that you might need, please let me know so that I can pass that along to people. And again,
thank you so much for allowing me to speak, and for your audience and all their help and support and their prayers. It's not about me. It's about all these families. I'm fine. I'm just trying to help the people that aren't. So thank you again so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And prayers are sent daily. God bless you and your family and all of those that you're helping. And I really, I wait for the day when we can speak and you can say, wow, you know, things are better. Things are getting better. Things are looking up. And again, please keep in touch with me and let me know anything that you may need from here on out. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So there you go, folks. That's a testimony to the strength of the human spirit, the courage and bravery of one woman, and also all of her associates, all of the people that helped in the inception of the opening of the HEB. Thank you all again so much for your help and for everything that you've done. And also, you know, it's a testament to faith that if we help each other, we can get through anything. And in light of, since this was recorded, we've had Irma hit, I'd like to share with you again a few reputable organizations in which you can send your monetary or box goods, any kind of donations that you have to. And these are reputable organizations, and all of the money, the proceeds, and the donations will go to the people. Look up sparkworldwide.org. That's an organization in which not only can you send donations to Texas, but you can actually pick the location in which you'd like donations sent to. So in areas of recent devastation in Florida, you can choose Florida. You can split your donation even, I'm sure. So check out sparkworldwide.org. They're a great company, organization. Kyani.net, look them up, Kyani.net. They're doing potato packs where you can order 10 servings of potato packs or however many you want, I would assume, and send them to the victims of Hurricane Harvey. Please check them out. It's like an MRE. They're feeding a lot of people. At last count, over a week ago, they had fed 100,000 people with their potato packs. So please support them. Feed Our Vets is another great organization. They're collecting money to purchase grocery gift cards, $40 for single vets, $75 to veteran families. Also, we have Samaritan's Purse, P.O. Box 3000, Boone, North Carolina, 28607, 828-262, 1980. And you'll be able to also, with them, they're tax deductible, and you'll be able to choose the location in which you'd like to send donations to as well. Episcopal Relief and Development, P.O. Box 7058, Merrifield, Merrifield, Virginia, 22116-7058. Also, for that organization, you're able to choose which location you'd like to send your donations to. So those are just a couple of more options out there for you. Please take advantage of those, and not the Red Cross. I'd like to also let everybody know some really exciting news. My YouTube channel is finally up and running. I'm very excited about this. It's taken a lot of work, and with the help of some friends, I was able to pull it together. So all of my previous Positude Prophecy, Positude Passages, Positude Powwows, and the most recent Positude Podcasts will all be uploaded to that station. As of now, the first three are already up and running. You can view them, you can review them, you can download them, and the Positude Podcast will be forthcoming shortly. We're working on that as we speak. So please go ahead and support my YouTube station, Maggie, M-A-G-G-I-E, capital H-E-A-R-T. You'll know it when you see it. It's a picture of like orange flowers up on the panoramic, but just by the description, it'll give you, it'll say Positude Podcast, Positude Powwow. So please subscribe to that. And that way you can listen and re-listen to the the clips that we've shared from previous shows on there, which I'm really excited to be able to bring this type of material to everybody, to be able to share things with people that not only are essential to their learning, but as a direct result, hopefully we'll be able to help more people in need this way. And that's always my goal. To close out tonight, I have a band that I'd like to play a full song for because their songs are quite lengthy in nature. And they're called Hip Conspiracy out of Rochester. You can check them out on Spotify, iTunes, and also Bandcamp. And they're a wonderful band. Their music is very eclectic. It's very bluesy, jazzy. It's really neat stuff. Please give them a listen and support them. And as always, to open and close my shows, I have Pat Carr, my buddy Pat Carr. Check him out on SoundClick. His stuff is extraordinary. If I had enough time left in this broadcast, I probably would just play his whole album, but time didn't allow. So there you go, folks. Listen to the music, support the artist. Please do what you can to help others in need and to spread this video, spread the word. Thanks very much, as always, for listening. God bless you all and have a good night. Thank you. Bye-bye.